What's up, guys? Welcome to the Stage Right Podcast. This week we have one of my good friends, someone I've toured with, Locke, calling from Sydney, Australia, an amazing musician who plays pretty much everything. MD for Mansion Air, bass player, guitar player, keyboard player, I would say tech as well. Just an all-around amazing, amazing man. What's up, Locke? How you doing?
That's very sweet. That sounds like a lot, but it's not really.
You know it is.
It's amazing, man. Own it.
Jack of all trades, master of none, sort of vibe.
Absolutely. Well, same here. Same in my boat. Well, I'm going to jump right in with one of our biggest questions, really. And I didn't prepare you for this. I didn't tell you yet.
Oh. No.
But we always ask, how do you prepare your bagel?
Oh, what a weird question to ask an Australian.
Hey, we had British guys talk about it. Everyone loves a bagel.
Yeah, it's true. I guess like bagels are like, don't get me wrong, love a bagel. It's great, but it's like a fringe pastry in Australia. Like it's not a big hitter.
Now it throws me back to the Pink Floyd documentary where they're doing Dark Side of the Moon and Roger Waters is talking about oysters and says, I like to think oysters transcend national barriers.
Yeah. You asked me favorite oyster. I got an answer for that, but yeah, I don't know. I feel like I'm sure there's bagel connoisseurs that are just like you.
Well, you're talking to them right now. We are the bagel connoisseurs. Yeah.
The first time I ever went to New York, I went into like this is just as wide eyed as I could get, and I walked into a bagel shop. Deli thing.
Yeah.
And the guy was like, oh, like, what do you want? And I was like, all I wanted in my head was like a breakfasty sort of like, I wanted the bagel, some eggs, some bacon, some sauce, just that sort of thing, that's what I feel like exists in Australia. Like you get that level of bagel. You get like basically a sandwich, not so much like just like cream cheese or whatever. And then the guy was like, yeah. What type of bagel do you want? And I was like, oh, just a plain one. He's like, oh, and everything? I was like, no, I don't want everything. I want like, just like a bagel with tomato, maybe egg, bacon. He's like, yeah, but like an everything bagel. I was like, I'm sorry, 60-year-old man from Brooklyn. You don't understand me. I don't want everything on my bagel. I want egg. And then everyone in the shop was kind of looking at me, and then I was looking at them being like, why is everyone looking at me? So yeah, I feel like, sure, cream cheese is the short answer. Everything bagel, cream cheese. But I feel like I've learned the hard way. I don't know. It's just not like getting them like mutter under their breath at you. Like, oh, I just want breakfast.
I could just so picture that moment. Just, yeah. No, not everything.
not everything.
The big Brooklyn bagel guy behind the counter, like.
Yeah, who's just been there for like 50 years.
Yeah.
And he's an accent, Australian of all, and then just, yeah.
He just threw like a total wrench in his like monotonous day of everyone knowing what the fuck exactly they want.
Yeah.
And you come in, you're like, I just want like the standard bagel, dude.
Just give me a bagel.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I love it.
That's so good.
We had the pleasure of touring back in, I don't even know what year it was. But it was
2015?
2015, probably, yeah.
I don't know.
It must have been 16. Because it wasn't that long ago. And it was the Sirius tour with Mickey Echo. Shout out Mickey Echo and Nombe. And I heard you guys just release a track with Nombe. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? But what that was like to work with him?
Yeah. I mean, like we've known Noah since that tour. And I feel like you get to know someone pretty well after doing. How long was that tour?
It was 2 months, a month and a half, something like that. But that was an amazing tour. There's so much family vibes on that tour.
And 13 people on a bus.
Yeah. Cause all three bands were on one bus.
Oh yeah.
With one tour manager. Shout out Doug Wilson.
Doug. Poor Doug. That was a tough gig.
Oh, man, that poor guy. He held it together, though.
Yeah, I remember him saying the big trouble he had with that was, like, he had to do merch every night for three bands, and he was just like, tour managing is hard enough for three bands, let alone having at the end of the night, having to count out everyone's merch. And like, he said that was just like the, and I feel like we had one t-shirt, but I know Mickey and Nombe, they had like, just like a full line of clothes, like socks and stuff like that. And he was like, motherfucker, I thought I was going to be tour managing bands and now I'm just counting out socks for people. But yeah, I guess we'd just known that we'd been writing kind of, I feel like we've never really stopped writing our band Mansionaire, but, I'd written this thing that was kind of like just very different to the stuff that we would usually make and was sort of sitting on a hard drive, probably like 2 years of just doing nothing. And then I was like, this is ridiculous. I like this. We should find a home for it. And I sent it to Noah just being like, I don't know. What do you think? Do you like it? Would you be interested? And he sent back like all the vocals done. And he was like, what do you reckon? I was like, oh, this is done. This is great. So like the actual making it was super easy. I don't know. That doesn't happen that often with something just like, you just send something and you get something back and you're just like, perfect. Let's put it out.
That's amazing. What's the name of the track?
It's called Guillotine.
Man, yes. That is the single that I checked out last night. I love the sound of that. The mix and just the overall vibe, the instrumentation. It's pretty choice.
Thanks, man. Yeah, different for our band. We've always been like a bit like, more sort of slower, bit more like needlessly dramatic. And then that one's just like a fun, like not everything's so sad, doomy and gloomy. It's like actually just like a fun song.
So I have a million questions for you about what's been going on in the past few years for you, but I want to start with how Mansionaire actually started. Like, where did this all begin for you guys?
Yeah, I mean, we had a really weird start as far as like bands go. Like we're all kind of roughly from the same area in Sydney, just north. Like it's called the Northern Beaches, we all kind of knew each other, but like knew it's small enough that it's not like a small town, but it's small enough that you'd kind of know people from other schools and stuff like that, and. Me and Alex, our drummer, we both were really into like, we're the only people that we knew that were like into like, I guess now stuff that's like Flume, like that kind of thing that came out of Australia in like 2014, 13 or whatever. And we were the only people, yeah, that we knew that liked that sort of stuff. And we were like, why don't we try and make some of this sort of stuff? And I was working in a studio, had like an internship at like a sound house that wrote ads and stuff like music for ads, and they let me use the studio whenever they weren't doing stuff. I was so green. I remember like I'd got a studio internship and I was like, I didn't know what like MIDI was. I didn't know like didn't know how to do anything. But
what was like a super green moment for you?
Oh, yeah, I immediately have the answer for this. It was, they were trying to, they had like a Roland, is it like the SV1? Is that what it's called? Like the stage piano sort of thing? I don't know if that's the model number, but like just one of those Nord style stage piano, I think the Roland version. And they were trying to show me they were like, oh, we're going to play some stuff. We've got some MIDI and we're going to send that to the stage piano and then record the audio from that. And I was like, nah, I don't understand. What do you mean? How could you? They're like, yeah. So we're going to send MIDI to the piano. The piano is then going to play the audio and we're going to record the audio. I was like, yeah, that's not made it any clearer. What's MIDI? If you don't press the keys, how can you record audio? Just like that sort of stuff. And I was like, ugh. And then I think at that moment, the people that had hired me had gone like, fuck. This guy. But yeah, trial by fire, learned tons. And then so me and Alex, would make beats and make stuff. And then, and then I knew Jack as well, our singer. And then was just one day, I was like, hey, we got this thing. Do you want to come in and sing on it? And we did the whole song. It was our first song. It's called Hold Me Down. And we just threw it up on SoundCloud. And that was it. We had one of those like SoundCloud things where it just kind of got a bit of a, like, internet had a little moment with it. And then all of a sudden we just were away. We were a band and people were like asking us, getting these emails being like, hey, we'd love to hear more stuff. We'd love to hear your other demos. And when are you guys playing live shows and all this stuff? And we were like, whoa, this is, we have absolutely nothing. This, like, we only just really kind of met each other probably. And so I feel like ever since then, we've just been like trying to catch up. And now we're like, finally, we had to like go away, I feel like, for a couple of years and go do that stuff where you're like just jamming, where you're like friends in a room, in a garage, like making song. Like we kind of jumped straight to like feeling like we were making making mistakes in public in a weird way. Like that's how we felt. Like we felt like, oh, people really liked our first song, so we want to make sure the second one is good. But we were shit at the time, so we didn't know how to make a good song. And like, we just had to,
figure it out as
quickly as we could. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, maybe we're still not there, but we're closer.
I love it. It's a great story. It's such a weird place too.
One day closer.
One day closer.
Well, let's talk a bit about gear now, since this is a tech podcast. And I know you and I have had a lot of tech conversations. Let's talk about your rig currently. How has it evolved since I saw it last? How has your tracks rig evolved? Because our last guest was an MD for a lot of great British bands, including Doty. And so we got pretty deep into the track side. So what are you working with these days?
Do you know what? We're right in the middle of, it's actually good timing to talk to you guys because we're right in the middle of like rethinking how we do our show. Because obviously no gigs because of COVID stuff for a little bit. And also like we're about to start working towards like a second album and all this sort of stuff. Getting the show together. And the last iteration of the show was like an Ableton rig coming out of like the Play Audio 12 stuff.
We talked about those last time. Those are such great interfaces.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe when I saw you last, Chris, that we were running like a Motu 8-28X or something like that.
Yeah, and like Mickey, we had a new rig that was the Motu Lights, which Motu, I hate them. They're terrible. Their startup time is insane. They're just not good devices.
Mm. We had, I remember our Motu 8-28X had this like unidentified, we just could never work it out, this glitch that sounded like a sample rate dropout and it would throw everybody. We just couldn't, years of like, we replaced the unit, we replaced every piece of gear. We couldn't.
I haven't told you my worst story, Locke, with our tracks, right? But when I first built a rig for Iration, we didn't have enough time to get any kind of interface ready for it. So we didn't have the eye connectivity. So I used my UAD Apollo Twin and like two songs in, I don't know what happened. It must have been sample rate, but everything just dropped like a half octave.
Oh.
So it was like a full pitch shift. And so they like started trying to sing and everything was pitched down.
Oh no.
It was just a disaster.
That's tough.
It was so, so bad. And it was just two outs too. It was just a mono, you know, for the tracks and then a mono click. For the click. Yeah. Oh.
I mean, we're having this conversation at the moment. It's wishful thinking, but I guess maybe we're in the headspace of like, let's get rid of the laptop. Like, let's do a full show. Off the, you know, let's get rid of it. Let's go doorless. Let's like do all that sort of stuff. It feels a little it feels a little bit wishful thinking. I reckon we'll probably end up coming back to just like a Ableton rig with the Play 12. But a boy can dream, you know?
It's good, man, to have that thought and always question if you need it and do both. Like, man, if that thing fails, it's great to know that you can carry on and do a show and still put it on, you know?
Yeah. So I feel like so much of our show and also like suited to our band, because I feel like our band is sort of like, is, you know, we've got a full kit. Alex is behind like 20 line drum kit sort of thing. And Jack's playing guitars and everything used to be like SPD pads, playing Ableton drum racks, and everything was computer used to be the absolute brain, and all the guitars were getting processed in Ableton. They sounded like shit. Oh. And yeah, like two guitars, because we wanted to do like all this sidechain stuff. This before we had like a front of house who could just do it up there. And like, so we were like, we had to be fully, fully independent in the, like, we just had to be able to like show up and have our stuff that we wanted to do. But I think, yeah, more and more the laptops sort of moved further and further out of as becoming like a necessity, particularly for some stuff that we have that's like really bandy. Like that's really, is just me playing bass, Jack playing guitar and singing, and Alex drumming. And we're just like, oh, cool, we're a band at this moment. But we still have some songs that are like super production heavy, super like just needs the support of tracks and paraphernalia. So
are you trying to push away from that in this next record and these upcoming tours? Are you trying to like kind of ditch tracks and be more, like you said, bandy?
Yeah, the new music's a bit more bandy. I was looking at those like MPC live things, and I was like, okay, I'm going to go down this path, and I'm going to like load up what I need, and I'm going to configure the songs to like work in that space. And kind of looks like it's, for our stuff at least, it looks like it's more problems. It'll create more problems than it'll solve. But I don't know. We're still at the level where we're setting up all our gear, and we're like, we're sort of responsible for the show to run. And I love that. That's really great. But at the same time, I don't want to have to be thinking before a show, oh God, I hope like the laptop doesn't die. Like I just don't want to, yeah. You know, the times where it is just like the three of us playing and we do just play as a band, I'm like, oh, this is so much fun. This is beautiful. And, you know, trying to like minimize as many problems as we can. And then if one day we decide to bring someone out who can help with that sort of world, then it's like,
hello.
Yeah. Come to Australia. Then it's like, hell yeah. Then we're away, and then it's no stress. But I think at this level, it's like good to just be trying to minimize the amount of problems we have, or minimize the amount of moving parts.
Cause even for me as the tech, like actually focusing on that stuff, even being guitar tech and MD is a super stressful thing to watch those laptops. Cause so much can go wrong. Mm. They get bumped. Some idiot touches a button. Like there's just so many question marks surrounding that kind of a rig. And there's not really a great way to completely foolproof it. Cause if a laptop overheats, it overheats. Or if the interface for the power goes out, you're done. And that's what I've always thought about our rig, is everything is pretty much run off one power source. So if someone rips out my power cable, every guitar goes down, all the tracks go down, and the show's down for about 30 seconds to a minute.
Yeah.
For like restart.
Have you had that happen often?
No, because I'm very careful about it. Because all my power cables are, you know, tied, so they can't be just like pulled out if someone trips and all that kind of stuff. So I've never had the Kempers go down, because we're on all Kempers. And I actually haven't had, because of course the iConnectivity Play Audio 12, like we talked about last episode, has two inputs for a laptop and it can automatically switch. I've never had it switch so far. So I've been very lucky.
That just also sounds like you being good at your job and a professional.
I think I'm just lucky.
Good at his job, yeah. Gotta say. He's doing two big jobs at once.
I'm going to say it like Locke. I'm just one step closer to being professional.
That's nice.
That's a good way to put it, man. Yeah.
Mm.
And then, of course, you just got your gold record.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. That's cool.
That's
congratulations,
amazing.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
That's huge.
Yeah.
I want you to tell Los where you decided to put it, because you told me last night where you were going to hang it up.
Yeah. It's on the back of the door of my toilet.
Because that is glorious, man.
Because, yeah, I don't know. You don't want to... We all got one. So there's one, we put one in our studio because that's like a nice thing to do, right? Like that's,
yeah,
that
yeah.
makes the most sense where it should go. And then I was like, just somewhere, didn't want it like in the house. And so it'd be like, imagine if it was like on that wall behind me. And then it's like, welcome. is that what you've got? Is that behind you?
No, that's Sarah's collected beer coasters.
Oh, okay. They kind of look a little bit like records.
You know, I don't have any gold records.
I don't know, man. I think you're great.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Oh, and then, you know, like if people put them in the house, that's great as well. But it's, at the same time, I think I have too many friends that would give me
sit down in the morning. Take your shit. Yeah.
little motivation.
Right at your gold record, man. It's a great way to start your day.
I just love the idea of like maybe you had a party and someone didn't really know you and like went to take a shit, like closed the door and looked up like, oh, fuck.
Holy shit.
This guy's got a gold fucking record on the bathroom door.
Yeah, maybe it's the opposite where it'd be like, this guy's putting his gold records in the toilet? Like... Is this like overflow? Is this like we ran out of space elsewhere in the house? So we have to like put it in the bathroom? Man, this dude's fucking.
Yeah, it raises some questions for sure.
Yeah.
That's what I love about it. The little mystery. It's like, wait, why is this in the bathroom?
Why is this in the bathroom?
Oh, fuck. I love it. So what do you guys have planned? Like, do you have anything planned? I mean, what has COVID been like for you guys and for Australia?
Oh, man. We've been. Collectively, Australia and us individually, we've been so like it's COVID's kind of businesses. There's like restrictions and all that sort of stuff, but it's pretty, sounds like absolutely nothing compared to what you guys are and the rest of the world's kind of going through. I mean, it's the Australia being an island, I think, has probably helped a little bit. And also, like, you know, people are. There's not as many people here and we've been able to like get on top of it before it kind of got way too crazy. But yeah, I think it's strange when, you know, we had just over Christmas back up where my family lives, there was like a little like cluster sort of thing popped up and they just sent the whole suburb into like full lockdown, like can't leave your house sort of thing. Except for essentials. And that was even still, that was only like, there's been 10 cases today. Like that was at that level. So I think they're just like.
In the country, 10 cases in the country?
Yeah.
Wow.
Of that day. So I feel like we're still, and I guess the fear was like, once it gets past a certain point, I mean, I don't really know what I'm talking about, but like once it gets past a certain point, then it becomes too hard to manage.
Man, I don't even know how many cases we had today, but it was definitely a fuckload more than 10.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that right now.
It feels like it was probably 10 in a county.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we're getting better here in my town of St. Louis Park, but it's still not good.
Mm.
And I know so many people who have gotten it. It's crazy.
Really?
Like, oh yeah. It's hitting so close to home now. It's unreal. And dude, America's gone insane. And of course you saw the Capitol riots and everything.
Yeah. It's a feels like a season finale of a TV show.
I know. What do we look like from your side? Like, what do you think of America right now?
It just seems like there's so many things are coming to the surface or not coming to the surface. I've been there for a bit, but like, I wouldn't be able to even begin to put into words the like.
I think that's the thing right there. I can't.
Yeah. Yeah. And there doesn't feel like there's any fresh insight into like, oh, it can't be. This feels like there's too many things popping up that just can't be explained by, oh, well, it's because of, you know, so and so. It's just like, it's kind of been everything. It's everything for a long time. Meeting
yeah,
at
it's
the
a lot
surface.
Of things at once. Yeah.
Mm.
And it just doesn't stop. There's a new thing every day. We get the murder hornets. You got COVID. You got Capitol riots. You got Trump. It's just like,
let's be real. We didn't need murder hornets on top of everything else.
Yeah. That was a little bit much 2020.
That feels a bit like a joke. Like, that feels
like a That was like the kicking a dick during a fight. You just don't do it.
You just
it's too far.
Yeah. Low blow.
Right, let's go. Let's go back to music.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. So we got crazy, crazy lucky in that we had all our, we put an album out start of 2019, I think. And then we'd finished touring it. We did like a year of touring. We finished in February 2020. That was like the last like shows were booked. And so we were super lucky that we didn't have to cancel anything, which I know isn't the same for a lot of people. And we'd already kind of planned like after that to go back and write another record and start making things. So for the most part, you know, I feel like the COVID stuff is going to be long lasting, and like there's so many venues and that are closing down, and you know, bands are struggling and all that sort of stuff as well. So the impacts for us haven't been immediate, but I'm sure down the line,
yeah, start, absolutely, like,
sort of showing the actual damage that the closures and all that sort of stuff have done.
And then, what did you write this record? Because you were in that cabin that I saw following your Instagram.
Yeah, well, we started going away and doing like writing trips. We'd never really done that before. We were always kind of just like, let's go to like a studio space in the city. And for the first time we were like, let's like go rent an Airbnb for 2 weeks and set up and try. And we were like trying to, if I do it again, I'd do it differently. But at the time it was like, let's just get like a giant desk, like a X32 or something, run everything in, really like pour, like turn someone's Airbnb living room into a rehearsal space. Not really mic anything particularly well, but like everything's at least being captured, hit record, and then just spend 10 hours throughout the day just like playing, which is cool. Super different to how we've done everything in the past. Everything's been very like in the box, build songs, like produce and write in that sort of way, rather than just like
come up with jams and get together.
Yeah. Be a bit more of a band sort of thing.
So you said it changed your process. How did it change your process versus being so stuck in the box? Did it make things feel more open and free, or like how did that affect the writing process?
I think it, for us, it meant that we were able to like not, we didn't have to judge it at the time. Like we could just play things and just be like, all right, let's go here for, do this thing for a little bit. And then, when we come home from those trips, we would sit down and we'd sort through 40, 50 hours of rehearsal sort of stuff, which sucks.
Sounds like, oh
wow. So would you grab like whole songs, or would you just put together like little pieces here and there?
Yeah, little pieces. Alex is really good at that stuff. I think his brain is wired to like to enjoy that sort of stuff. And it's my nightmare because like nothing's like on the grid. Everything's so you, like, it's just, and there's 30 tracks of everything. So these sessions are massive. But you listen through it and then you find that little idea and you're like, oh, that's cool. And then all of a sudden, grab that, turn that into a full song. So yeah, really different, because it used to be for us, we'd get in a room and we'd like hit record, or not even that, sorry. We'd get in a room and we would be like, okay, what do you want to write today? And we'd like, all right, let's start with this guitar line. And you go, oh, okay, let's add some drums. And it was all, yeah. And the building for us didn't really, there were too many like decisions that you had to make all the time, being like, is that the best snare sound? And it's like, who gives a shit what that snare sounds like right now? Like, that's not going to determine whether the song is going to be good or not. So this was a way for us to just like carve all that out. And it worked.
Worry,
I feel like
that's
just going to be how we do. Yeah, music first.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll be us for the next like however long we're a band for. Like that's our process now, I think.
And that cabin looked fucking beautiful. That like location was insane.
It's nice to feel like validated in going and staying in a nice house. Like we're like, oh, it's,
dude, the Beatles when they did the White Album, they all, you know, went to India and then they all stayed at George Harrison's house when they came back and kind of did that, like just recorded demos on like a 4-track.
Mm.
Brilliant. Nirvana. Have you seen the photos of his mansion?
Who?
George Harrison.
Yeah. Dude, oh, Friar Park.
One of the most unbelievable houses I've ever seen, I feel like.
It's insane. It's such a huge property.
Oh, so it's crazy. Wild. It's like Downton Abbey on steroids.
Yeah, I would love to just be there for like a second and walk.
Just to walk in the front door and just see the foyer. Like,
dude. Oh man, I had another record too that I was gonna say and I totally forgot it now. But
well, In Utero. It was the Nirvana one. That's what was recorded in Cannon Falls, In Utero. That's like 40 minutes from me where that studio is. And I actually got to record there. We stayed overnight.
It was a studio rather than a...
It's a studio mansion. So there's like a large studio and then like 100 yards away is a mansion built by, I think, Frank Lloyd Wright designed... One of his students designed the mansion and the studio. And they're about 100 yards apart. And there's like a big indoor pool in the house. And when you book studio time, you get the studio, an engineer, and you get the house to stay in. And we got to stay there for 2 nights and had an absolute rager. Someone put on like 50s show tunes. I woke up hungover at like 6 a.m. to like show tunes like blaring throughout the house. It was really surreal. It was so cool.
I guess, yeah, you have to do that, right? Like that's part of...
Especially when you're like 20, you know?
You're in a mansion recording studio.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Damn. I think my favorite like studio like that I've personally been in is Sonic Ranch. Have you ever been there?
No.
In pretty much on the Mexican border, man, by El Paso in Texas. It's like a giant pecan farm and they have like an artist house basically with beds and a kitchen and like a whole house. You can just live there, sleep. And then they have a bunch of studios throughout the property and like a mastering suite. And Tony, the owner, is this amazing guy and has like just great taste in art. So he has like Picasso lithographs and Dali fucking like limited edition sculptures and painting things like all over it, you know? And like great coffee everywhere, fucking just Neve consoles, like all the outboard gear you could ever fucking need and dream of, like guitars. He owns like this one Telecaster that Stevie Ray Vaughan owned and played. And man, yeah, like anything for a gearhead and as an artist, I think that's like a total dream situation, like to record there. And because hey, you're in the middle of nowhere and you can just focus on what you came there to do, you know, make some music, record, and you got all the toys, man. Like you can fucking go nuts. Like all the amps, all the guitars, any microphone, like the best consoles.
Wow.
Here's the question though. Is there a 58 Les Paul in a Dumble?
I'm sure there is. I can look it up. But dude, I can guarantee you that he has it. And if he doesn't, I'm sure he can like fly it in, or he knows somebody that can get it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What are you playing for guitars now, Locke? Are you still on the Tele?
I'm still on the Tele. It's like a Japanese. I can't remember what year, but I found an old, when I was like 15, I bought this like Les Paul Studio and it was all white. Which I guess when I was 15, I was like, this is cool as shit. Like I've got a all white Les Paul Studio. I think my like girlfriend at the time when I was 15 was like, yeah, this is definitely the best one. There's like so many other, anyway, I couldn't afford a standard, but I could afford the studio. And I found it in my like parents' basement. I'd clearly like left it for a long time. And I just got it like fixed back up and it's been great. I've been playing it again. It's got like a little bit of a thicker neck. It's like really like warm. I find that like the Tele that I've been playing for a while, is so old and was constantly, I don't even remember if you remember on that tour, like I had you, Chris, like constantly being like, can you fix it? Cause like
yeah.
pots were always breaking. There's like, it's fun to play, like really easy to play, but like no sustain whatsoever. Like just a really sort of like okay sounding guitar, like nothing too exciting.
Yeah. But,
A challenge of a guitar. Yeah.
The vibe of that tour, like what kind of sums it up is the last time I think I worked on it, I was in a laundry room while everyone was doing their laundry with like my tech kit set up on a table with like the detergent surrounding it.
That was great. A bootstrapping tour. That was yeah. just get it done, you know?
Good times.
Yeah. Where was that tour at? Here in the States or Australia? Yeah. Okay.
I've never been to Australia. Not yet.
Damn. Oh, man. You got to go.
It's so funny you talk about like the white guitar being so cool when you were a kid. Because in my head, when I was a kid, it was the Silver Burst Les Paul.
Ew.
That was so cool. Now I look at it, I'm like, God, it's fucking disgusting. Who would ever play that piece of shit?
I used to want a white Les Paul just because Lars from Rancid played one. And I was like, man, that shit looks cool as fuck. And it sounded just fat, you know? I was like, man, I want that fucking guitar.
See, now it's old school Sunburst, or what I have right now is the like deep cherry. I've got a double cut special with the deep cherry, and I love that. It's a good look.
I remember this was right when Gibson released the robot guitar that would tune for you.
Yep. What a shit show that was.
And it was like, that was the I was like, oh, do I get the robot guitar? Do I get the Les Paul Studio? Like what decisions was I making at the time where like those were my options? I was like, come on, there's so many other nice guitars. I was like, no, but I can tune to drop D really quickly.
Real quick if I needed to.
Really quick. Yeah.
But wait, I could just do it quick by ear. It'll take me 5 seconds.
Nah, it's just not the point.
You're missing the point here.
Yeah.
It does it itself. It's a robot. I'm pretty sure they fired that guy when they did their restructuring, the guy who came up with that idea.
Oh, dude, once they went bankrupt, they're like, that guy has got to go like first.
Because everyone would buy those guitars and people are buying them up now because no one wants them, and just pulling off that system and putting on like real tuning pegs because it's so slow. And I haven't used it extensively. But as far as I know, you can't manually tune it.
Really?
Because I tried
that makes
once.
No sense.
It just fought back on me, like just ripped the tuner back out of my hand.
I never like spent the time to look at like how does it actually work? Is there a button that you have to press on the guitar?
Yeah, there's a button on the back that you can hit the tune, and then you can also like set what tuning you want to put it to. So you could do open, which is why it might be nice for like some crazy open tunings. But to be honest, I can't play open tunings anyways. So who cares? You know, because I'm not that good of a guitarist. but yeah, I never got it. I like my old school guitars.
It's definitely solving a problem that doesn't really need to be solved. Like it's not enough to have like a marketing campaign put behind it.
And it's so not a pro product, you know, because what am I going to do? Sit side stage and have it tune itself and then hand it off to my lead singer?
There goes your job.
There's no way. But also, it's not going to be accurate. You know, on a live, loud stage, there's no way I'm going to trust that.
Chris, are you hating on this because you feel like it might pull you out of work as a guitar tech? You're just like, you know.
The truth comes out.
Yeah, you're the taxi driver looking at automated cars being like, nah, it'll never work. Like, this is useless technology. It's not so, who needs this? It's not pro. It's not a pro product.
You're Addison in the cars, Nikola Tesla.
Thank God I got into MDing and podcasting.
The truth shall set you free.
It's okay. My guys can't program their Kempers, so I'm still good.
Nice.
Let's talk about sidechaining quickly. Let's explain what sidechaining is and how you use it in your music.
Yeah, it's turned into a pretty big part of our sound, I think at least. But it's basically like where you have a signal, so it'd be like a guitar or synth or whatever, that's reacting to another signal somewhere else on the track. So often in like dance music, it's like the kick drum. Kick drum is triggering the volume to dip on like a piano or a synth line or a guitar. And so it kind of gives you that like undulating, like suck. Well, at least that's how we've used it.
It kind of gives space for everything to live in more cohesively.
And gives that groove. So it's like it can suck down that synth line along with the kick drum. So you kind of have a more like a pushing rhythm in a way, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess often, like, wasn't it that it used to actually just be for like to get the, before it became like a stylistic thing, wasn't it just to like, so that you'd put it on something that was similar to the frequencies of a kick drum, for example, and it would actually like duck the bass, for example, would get out of the way of the kick drum.
Like exactly. Yeah. It was like, yeah, mostly used kind of like that, like kind of what you just said of the bass and the kick, just trying to live together in a happy place.
Do you ever use sidechains in your mix, Carlos?
I am not a huge fan of sidechaining. If I do end up using it, it's more of a, like a stylistic thing. It's not a go-to for me. I like to keep my mixes simple, just pretty straightforward. What about you, Chris? You use a lot of sidechaining?
I never sidechain. I've tried it a few times, but I'm not an engineer anyways. I just engineer podcasts now, so I'm not going to sidechain your vocal into mine. It's not going to work out for us.
You never know.
I mean, I have used it before to make a kick breathe a little more and kind of bring the kick out in the mix. Like Locke was saying, like versus the bass or versus whatever it might be, or even for vocals. But I find I always try it and never really love the sound for the songs that I've tried to put it in on, and certainly not for the mixing I'm doing these days. So, and you know, I mean, I always sidechain my Kempers, obviously, but that's a joke, everyone.
Yeah.
Just kidding.
Yeah, I think it's my approach to mixing is just very like straightforward and simple. So,
yeah. You're a simple man, you know?
I am, dude. I just, I don't like to overcomplicate things, but if it's used tastefully, I'm super into it.
And I think on the production side, like you're talking about Locke, for like actually making the music in the studio, it's a much more useful tool than it is in a live situation, you know?
Yeah. I feel like, especially where my skill set, like where I think I'm good at stuff and bad at stuff, like I'm not by any means like I don't think I have the sort of like engineering background so much, or I think that's been like learned rather than something that's just kind of come naturally. So sidechain and stuff like that had always been like a creative tool before it was like, oh, I need to like let the kick breathe a little bit. It would just be like, I want that synth bass to suck in a good way.
That's absolutely great. Yeah, I approach it from the other side, like more of the engineering, like trying to fix things or give something room. And I think I'd rather do other avenues first than just go straight into like a sidechain situation.
I think you're just an EQ guy, really. You live and breathe EQ.
Yeah, I just honestly, I try to get a good gain, obviously a good signal, and then EQ, like high pass and EQ, like have a good microphone on it and EQ, just make it sound how it naturally sounds. A lot of people kind of dig themselves into a hole when they try to make things sound how they're not. Or if you're going to do that, just make it flavorful and like consciously, especially artists. Like a drummer knows how his drum kit sounds and he tunes it to that sound for a reason. So you don't want to go ahead and make the snare sound how you like it. Especially as a monitor engineer, you want to just give them the raw signal, how it sounds to them. And usually you can, that's a great base to start off from. For me personally, I find that if you make something sound how it sounds on stage, usually people love it. And you can only go good from there. Like if you start messing things too much, then you just dig yourself into a hole, man. It's a little touch of compression here and there if it needs it, but It's mostly, like figuring out your gain and EQ and have a good microphone. I'm a huge believer in having a good microphone for the right source, the right microphone for the right source.
Like an SM7B for your voice.
100% that I am not using.
Yeah, neither am I. I'm using the wrong microphone for my voice. At least I got the right preamps. Well, fuck. This has been super fun, Locke. It's good to talk to you again. It's been so fucking long. It's great to see your face and your long hair again.
Oh, man. Thanks for letting me come and vent and have a chat. I haven't talked like tech stuff in a while because there's just been no shows and no like... This is a great podcast to you know, get everyone...
Lois and I keep saying it's almost more for us than anything else, just to be able to have these conversations again, like we're back in a bus lounge or with tech friends and meet new people. It's just, it's cathartic for us to be back in that environment because we're all just stuck at home not having these conversations. Because if I start talking model numbers to Sarah, she's going to put a knife through my neck.
Mm. Yeah, it's kind of like reminiscing and like shooting the shit with your friends side stage or in out, you know, the back lounge of the bus. And
it's the best.
Man, it's great to connect with people and have these cool conversations and, you know, reminisce a little bit and
just fucking talk tech. Just tour talk, man. It's just back lounge talk.
Yeah. The podcast is definitely a bonus, but I love the conversations, man.
Yeah. Well, Thanks for calling
us from the future, man. I hope
it's going to be a good day for everyone. Here. That's the best thing. The future's great. There's no problems.
I hope they didn't storm the Capitol again. I hope there's no riots in every single state. We'll see.
There's no,
well,
keep us no posted, violence. Man. Yeah.
The future looks bright. Looks like a good day.
Phone call from me in like a couple of days. It's just like, guys,
run.
I was wrong. What's more likely? Are you guys gonna be in Australia next, or am I gonna be in America?
I'm guessing you're in America.
Yeah, so, I don't think Australia's gonna allow Americans over there soon.
All right, Locke. Well, right. Thank you so much. Thanks for listening to Stage Right, and we'll see you guys next week. Hopefully, it's gonna be a fun week.
Hey, everyone! Thanks for tuning in. Remember to give us a like, subscribe, and a follow on Spotify, Apple Podcast, and on Instagram @StageRightPodcast. Thank you.